one of the, you know, in education, we have all of our phrases and everything that comes in. And one thing that came in, and it still kind of here, is the growth mindset. And truly, you have to be able to think about like, okay, I did this, you know, 10 years ago, but it's not working now. So I have to like shift and pivot to do something different to get my kids to learn. And I think that's what I think so many teachers are put into this box, that it's not them who don't want to change. It's the system that around them that forces them to stay that kind of like stagnantness. But when we have one class per grade level, so we get to innovate however we want each year because we have a new group of students that come in, which is, I think, really great.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Brighter Together podcast. My name is Janet Courtney, and my special guest today is Taylor Stanton. Taylor is the superintendent, almost messed it up, Taylor, at the Museum School District in San Diego, California. My notes, I moved my notes to the side and then it wasn't there. And I was like, okay, use your memory, Janet, use your memory. So Taylor, welcome to the show. We're happy to have you here.
Thank you very much for having me. And you know, it's not wrong because I have multiple hats working in the small charter. So I'm the LEA, Local Education Agency Superintendent, but I'm also our school superintendent. So I serve multiple roles.
Gotcha. So tell us about the museum school and a little bit of the demographics and about you.
Yeah. So we are a TK through eight. TK is like preschool. So it's 4-year-olds all the way through eighth grade, a small charter school. So we have 242 students this year, which is the most students we've had in a very long time. Thank you. We have one class per grade level and we do a lot of arts integration and then project-based learning for our students. So what makes us very unique is one, your kids stay with their group of kids all the way up from kindergarten, all the way up through eighth grade. But then throughout the process, they do a lot of public speaking, again, really hands-on project-based. And then we also tie in arts integration as well. The biggest thing that we try to do is make learning as fun for kids as possible, because we know how we're competing with screens, we're competing with everything that's out there. So we have to be as engaging as we possibly can. So having all those tools in our proverbial bag really just makes it a lot easier for our kids to learn.
Yeah. It's not like when I went to school. That's for sure. That 1970s. I tend to say not that 1950s model, but I'm not quite that old. So even the 1970s model, you know, it's like that's when I started kindergarten, I think I was born in 67. So I'm 58. So that would have been almost five. Well, it was so funny because I went back then. My birthday's in October. Quick story here. So the cutoff was October 15th. My birthday's October 12th. I was the youngest of four. My parents needed me in school so my mom could go back to work. And so the entire first year, my mom and the kindergarten teacher were like, she's not ready. I don't care. She needs to go. It was so funny because I go back and I look at the records and it was just this back and forth between the two of them. And I had no idea. I was playing. I was having a good girl time. So anyway, but that is not the model of today. So anyway, so go ahead. Sorry.
Oh, no, I was just going to say I started kindergarten in 1995 and I'm a December baby. So I was one of the older kids in my classes because I was so far into the year. And it's so drastically different from when I was in school.
Yeah, that's sad because that's the year I got married, Taylor. We've been married for 30 years. So thank you very much. I appreciate that. I could be your mother. It's okay though. I look good, right? I look good
exactly.
For 58.
Yes.
And if you can't see me, you can just nod your head and say yes if you're listening.
Yes.
Oh, so fun. Anyway, so tell us about like your philosophy and what does that mean for, you know, we can talk about, yes, there's differences, but what does it mean? What does it truly mean?
I think is that what it means for me and what it means for our school is that we really want we have such a diverse learning population when it comes to, you know, ethnic backgrounds, but also special education backgrounds too. About 20% of our population has an IEP, and that doesn't even include our students who are on 504s. And so I think for us, it's that anyone who wants to come here should. We'll always say that we are the eccentric and the eclectic. So if you're not fitting in your traditional public school setting, like this would probably be the school for you. And I love that because everyone here you don't have to be artsy. We have athletes, we have incredibly intelligent students. You have our artsy focus as well. So you can do all of that through the lens of arts integration and project-based, and it can all tie together. I think the really big thing is that we try to pinpoint our students' individual like wants and needs and tie mm-hmm. that into how they're learning.
Yeah, it really has to be. And I've heard this is a theme that I'm starting to hear pretty consistently is, excuse me, really individualized based learning, you know?
Yes.
And yeah, we've been talking about that in special education for 70, 80, whatever years. But, you know, all of a sudden it like it's making mainstream and it's like it needs to be. But it's not easy when you're used to teach to the middle, right? We have to teach to the middle. And that isn't the reality anymore. So finding, and there's so many different ways to do that. But if you've been a teacher for 35, 40 years, it's like, how do I do that? I don't know how to do that. I've never even considered it, right?
And I think that is really the kind of like the turning point for people. We have our kindergarten teacher has been here at the museum for about 20 plus years, but then teaching for about 30. And they embrace the change. And I think that's what it is. So we, one of the, you know, in education, we have all of our phrases and everything that comes in. And one thing that came in, and it's still kind of here, is the growth mindset. And truly, you have to be able to think about like, okay, I did this, you know, 10 years ago, but it's not working now. So I have to like shift and pivot to do something different to get my kids to learn. And I think that's what I think so many teachers are put into this box, that it's not them who don't want to change. It's the system that around them that forces them to stay that kind of like stagnantness. Mm-hmm. But when we have one class per grade level, so we get to innovate however we want each year because we have a new group of students that come in, which is, I think, really great. I think as I came from, I'm from the Midwest, I'm from Missouri originally, and I went to a school, a high school that had about 2,200 kids, 700 kids in my graduating class alone. I couldn't tell you half of those people were.
No, I get it.
But with 240 kids in the K-8 setting, we have, like, we follow those kids throughout their entire career here. So we have eighth graders here. You'll see, you wouldn't see, but like if you were to come to the graduation ceremony at the end.
Absolutely.
At the end of the year, the staff are more emotional than the parents are because they saw those kids grow up from when they started out as five-year-olds. And now they're 13, 14 going off to high school. And we got to see that whole progression, which is really, really cool. And that's why you'll see one of two things happening. I believe that a smaller school setting just kind of across the board is better because it really allows us the ability, it forces us, but then also allows us the flexibility to really be and meet our kids' individual needs.
Yeah. And it's important. I was talking to somebody else who was, they do the same thing. It's all project-based learning. And he was, it was a really great conversation. I'm not going to try to go back and find it. I've talked to so many people, but it really is, it's an amazing thing that is happening in education. And, but people don't like change. And yet change is, it's life. Life is change. Life is always change. You know, you don't get to stay static. And if you do stay static, you're not just not progressing, you're going to end up going backwards. And that's not a positive thing. And I'll tell you, and I never mean to insult any of our listeners. So if you fit this demographic, I'm talking about my own. I'm talking about my demographic, those people that are in their 50s. I'm 58. Like I said, we are struggling with all of the technological changes that are happening. And if you're a superintendent or somebody that's a decision maker and you're resisting it, you're not doing your school or your students a service. You're doing them a disservice it intimidates me to no end, but I'm not going to sit and not deal with it because we've got AI. Holy moly. You know, it just isn't even, I mean, if you want to talk about the big thing right now, and AI is one of those things that even though it's changing, it what we had yesterday isn't what we have today, right?
Yes. I grew up in the age of, we had the one computer in your household, the original like Apple computers, and the CD of AOL that you would get from Blockbuster to get internet. And seeing it progress in my lifetime has been wild. From that to now, I have I don't even know where my phone is, but I have a computer on my phone.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
It's wild. And then, you know, funnily enough, I used to work in Geek Squad before I was going through college, and seeing the kids now, I feel like might just be as bad, to where they're technologically illiterate. They know how to use devices, but they don't know what they're doing. They don't know how it works, where I feel like, God, this is going to make me sound like, but like my generation, no, but like, you know, true, like growing up, we had to figure out how everything was working. And now, because we're so far along, that the kids today, they don't have to understand how their phone works. They just know that if I press these couple of buttons, I'm going to get to this app and be able to do this sort of thing. Mm-hmm. But you take that away from them, and then they're like, I don't know where I'm at. I don't know how, like, I don't know how to get around. I don't know how to talk to people.
Yeah.
It's wild.
My son was, it's so funny that you say that, because my son was, I'm told you, I'm down in Texas. He's up in Michigan, and he loves snowboarding. So he went to Cadillac Mountain to go snowboarding. And he's one of those kids that if no one else can go and he wants to go, he's just going to go. That's just how he is. And, you know, it's exercise for him and he loves it. And it was like an hour and a half drive for him to go from Grand Rapids up to Cadillac. And, he lost his phone. He was on a chairlift, and he thought that it maybe had fallen out. He had stuck it in his pocket, but it wasn't zipped. He's like, Mom, I don't know how to get home. He was freaking out. He called from the desk. You know, he wasn't even called. He's lucky I even answered the phone, because I didn't recognize the number. But it was a 517 number, and I was like, okay, so that's Michigan. I probably ought to answer that call. And it ended up being him, and he was like, I was Googling it for him, and I was like, write this down. Then the next morning, my husband gets a call from my son's phone, and it wasn't my son. They found his phone. But he had to navigate getting home without just GPS, stick it in front of you. And he didn't have any GPS navigation in his truck. So he was lost. And it was a good wake up call for him, because it's like, how dependent. And I told him that, I said, look at how dependent you are on technology for everything that you're doing. And he's like, Mom, I know, but that's just who I am. And that's the way I've been raised. And that's how, I didn't raise you that way, but that's society. And you know, it's like, I taught you to be independent, but that means sometimes you got to put that down. But it was a good experience for, it was a terrifying experience, but it was a good experience for him. And I agree with you 1000%. They don't know that this, and putting it down, like, how do we teach them to put it down, Taylor?
Well, the problem is that I don't think there's a good answer, because it starts with, it has to be like a collaboration from the home and school. Because if we have the no cell phone policy, and then the second that they leave school, they get to be on it for the rest of the night, well, that doesn't really help anyone, because they're still getting that kind of like fix. I don't know. It's a systemic problem. So it's not just something that the parents have to deal with, and it's not just something the school has to deal with. I think it's something we as a society have to kind of tackle and realize that we have kneecapped our kids by giving them too much tech too early.
And it is not the school's problem. Too many times in society, we put it on the school. You know, if there's a social issue, it's the school's problem to fix it. If there's a homeless issue, it's the school's problem to fix it. If there's abuse in the household, it's the school's. No, it's not. I mean, we do everything we can to get the kids ready to learn. Absolutely. We want them to be healthy. We want them to be fed. We want them to know that they're loved. We want them to be ready to learn. And you have to have all of these things. But somewhere along the way, society has decided that it's the school's responsibility to fix all of those things. And it's like, and then they accuse us of failing. And it's like, you know, let's put the mirror up there and look at ourselves a little bit harder. And see what you're doing, and that's part of the reason why Brighter's Together is here, so that we can put that mirror out there to say, look what you're talking about here, right?
Yes. Well, and you know, I moved to San Diego from the state of Oklahoma. I was a superintendent out there, and it's very much that same kind of mindset, to where it's, you're talking about a group of people who wake up every day to be woefully underpaid, to go and love on your children, provide them a safe environment, and spend nights, spend their weekends, spend their free time thinking about ways to help enrich and improve and then also educate kids. So I was clapping for those who were just listening. I was air clapping because I didn't want it to be loud in your ears. But yes, because it should be part of our responsibility, but the sole brunt of it should not fall on us. It should be a collaboration and a partnership with us, the families, and then the broader community as well. Because like the city, the state, and then the federal government too need to be a part of this process to provide funding for it, you know, the resources, and then the incentives, you know, healthcare, education. We keep talking about the amount of people who are not or leaving the fields, you know, and instead of focusing on that, let's focus on how we can get them to stay in the field and what's it going to take. I think first, a lot of respect, or just even a little bit of respect.
Yeah. Some, can we get some, please?
Yes. Yeah. We would start in the best way.
Occupational therapy shouldn't be one more thing on your plate. It should be a solution. Lighthouse Therapy offers school-based occupational therapy services that actually work for you and your staff. Our OTs have an average of 16 years of experience in schools, and they support everything from handwriting to fine motor to sensory integration. And you can choose from three different service models, whether it be virtual, hybrid, or in-person. It's OT that fits your workflow without the chaos. Visit lighthouse-therapy.com/brighter together to learn more. Yeah, and it's so important because, you know, I mean, it's the most important job, you know, out there, you know, is education, educating our students. And yeah, there's plenty of other important jobs as well. I shouldn't say the most, but it is. I mean, I think parenting is the most important job because they're your first teacher anyway. But, you know, it matters. And yet the disrespect and the judgment, everybody went to school. So everybody's got an opinion and everybody's opinion is based on what their experiences were. But they were never teachers, and yet they're judging us.
You know, can I make a controversial kind of hot take too? Sure. Sometimes it's people in my roles too that also kind of perpetuate that. And honestly, I'm the most least important person in the building when it comes to anything. I'm the behind the scenes, make sure the school runs, make sure the bills get paid, whatever, whatever. But it's the teachers, it's my paraprofessionals. You know, they are the ones working with kids. They're the most important people in the building.
And they're the least paid. And they're the lowest paid. They really are. And that's, yeah, it's a tragedy that needs to be corrected. And we don't, you and I aren't going to fix it today, but talking about it matters, you know, it does matter because education and special education. I mean, I'm a speech therapist. So special education is my jam, right? And has never been completely funded ever.
No. And it's such a shame too. I will say that, you know, in Oklahoma, that I feel like they had a really good like funding formula when it came to how they pay schools for when it comes to anything. But there just wasn't enough. They did invest a whole bunch of new money recently, but you know, not too little, too late. But like, where was this? California, it does great things too, but it's still there's just not enough money to fully do all the things that like everyone needs to do. And that's, I mean, talk about San Diego Unified or LA Unified, one of the largest school districts in the nation. Yeah. You know, it's hard all the way around.
Yeah. Yeah. One of the things I always tell people is, and I'll ask you this question at the end, but you know, it's like, if you could fix anything, any one thing, I'll give you a minute to think about it because we'll get to it. Last question. But I always say you can't say money because we know. Everybody knows there's not enough money in education. And it's funny how that has, it's sad funny, how that has just been accepted. You know, it's like, if there wasn't enough money to, I mean, right now we're in the middle of a shutdown. It's October 23rd. No, it's October 28th. It's 10:23 my time. October 28th, 2025. And we're 3 weeks in. I don't know the exact day, but multiple. And you know, I don't care what side of your aisle you're on. You're hurting people. Stop it. They need to stop it. And everybody in the country has got an opinion about it because it needs to stop. It needs to stop. You're hurting people. Stop it. And that's what that's the attitude we should have about the fact that schools are underfunded, is instead of everybody, and you guys do an amazing job, superintendents and school boards and the people that are dealing with the money are doing the best that they possibly can with the funds that they have and grants and chasing after money that really should just be there, but you have to go and fill out this 20-page grant to get your money so you can afford it, you know, and then you've got legislators coming behind you trying to change everything every time you turn around. And it's just like, well, you just fund it, yes. So, you know, and it should be like the shutdown. Fix it. You need to fix it, and it needs to be fixed right now, because this is our future. These children that we are educating are our future. And I think part of the problem is the ones that are really big influencers, they send their kids to private school. It's not affecting them directly. You know, they're not, and somebody's going to yell at me for that, and that's okay. You can yell at me all you want. I don't care. I have an opinion. I'm allowed to have an opinion just like you are.
Right.
But you're hurting your base. You know, you're hurting the people that are doing the living and, you know, working and dying and all of those things. That's a quote from It's a Wonderful Life. But those people are the people that are the ones that are going to be doing all of those things that you want done at your place or your you know, right, in the future. So let's give them an education. Let's give them a decent place to live. Let's make sure that they can, you know, feed their kids and move forward and be happy in what they're doing. And when you ignore it and deal with your pet projects, it's a problem.
I agree.
Yeah. So anyway, so tell me something else wonderful. Let's stop talking about all the negatives. Let's talk about some of the really amazing things that are happening at the museum school. What is one of your favorite things that's happening?
Honestly, it's the community. They are so tight-knit. We've started doing marketing, but it's not as much of a necessity here, which is great because we get a lot of word of mouth, which is wonderful. It's our parents talking about why they continue to send their kids here, why they sent them here in the first place. And then it's just the friendship and like the bonds that they form together. So at the end of the day, every day, it's very cute. Well, in the morning, you see them all, drop them all off. Everyone, we're talking and everything. But then at the end of the day, when they're picking them all up, you know, all the parents just worked, they're tired. But they're still out there chatting away. Their kids are outside running around playing. So, and it spills over into the school too, so that when something happens, like I just got back from getting married, and the amount of parents on my first day back were just like, oh my God, congratulations. And it's so nice, because for me, I'm just like, hey, I'm going to be gone for like 2 weeks. And, you know, they're like, why? And I'm like, oh, I'm getting married. And they're like, I'm sorry, what? Like, you know, it's that sense of belonging to the group as a whole. We all have, you know, an accountability, but also, you know, like a love for each other. And that is my favorite part about it, because everyone who steps onto campus, who walks up to campus, they have such positive intentions, which is great, because, you know, that's the first part of it. You have to have good intentions going into sort of anything. But then also everyone comes with a problem solver mindset, which is my favorite, because I'm a smart person. Southeast Missouri State and Arizona State say I'm a very smart person, but I'm not the smartest person in the room. So I love when my parents, the staff, the students even come with like, hey, let's do this because of this. We're reworking our dress code policy because the student was like, I hate this. And I was like, great, I do too. Let's fix it. So,
right,
you know, but they came with a let's solve the problem instead of let's just, this is a problem. Now someone else goes and deal with it.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. For sure. Absolutely. That's fantastic. And congratulations, by the way. That's fantastic. Good for you.
Thank you.
Yeah. Awesome. Awesome. It's a beautiful thing. I highly recommend it. We've been doing it for 30 years, almost 31 now. I told you I got married in 95, still married to the same person 30 years later. And it's so funny because he jokes and he's like, he'll say, yeah, we've been married and we've had 5 happily married years. Yeah, he's a jokester. He's been that way as long as I've known him, and he's my best friend. You know, he really is. Just, and he's my CTO. So that was ooh, When you work with family. Oh, yeah. But we figured it out. So it took us a little bit, but we worked, figured it out. So, okay. So that question, I'm gonna ask you that question now. So if you could fix, miraculously fix, I'm a Christian, so I believe in God and I believe in that he can do whatever, miraculously fix things. But if you could wave a magic wand, be miraculous, pick your choice, I don't care. Fix one thing and never have to, it's in your world, in the world of being the superintendent at the museum school district. If you could make that one thing just not be an issue anymore, what would you fix? What would be that one thing?
I'm going to zoom out just a little because I think this would fix not just for me, but for some other people. If every parent that sends their kid to school would take one day to sub in a classroom.
Wow.
Truly, truly, I think that would, my parents are great. So like I really don't have an issue, but I just, if every year they subbed one day in a classroom, I think everyone would have a greater understanding for what goes on in schools, and
Good
would
point.
really, really be able to help more when they talk outwardly, when they're
Yeah.
talking to their legislators or legislators, sorry, when they're talking to anyone,
Yeah. I'd like to get every single person that's a broadcaster on the news, radio, television, all of them, get them, all of them to do that one thing. And then the other thing
Yes.
that came to mind to me when you said that was I'm thinking of the big bruiser dad who's, I don't know, just I in kindergarten. Let's put him in
Yes,
kindergarten. How fun would that
you
be?
can't go to the what's going to make sense.
No,
You can't go
yeah.
to PE. You got to go to kindergarten and
Yeah,
see what's
no
going on down
football.
there.
No coaching football. I went yesterday. I went up to Ingleside here, and it's just north. I interviewed Scott. I'm not gonna have his last name. It's dang it, Scott. I'm sorry. But we went up there yesterday, and he showed us same thing. It's about TEA, technical education, and all of that. And they have, and a lot of what happens down here is the gas and the oil industry. And so we went and we saw his stuff, and it was so one of the places he took us to was the welding department. Scott Kilgore. I looked it up. It was going to drive me crazy. But he took us over. My daughter and I went and met him, and because I was like, man, you're in my backyard. I want to meet you. So we went yesterday. We took cookies. It was delicious. But they have 48 bays, and it is a it's about they come out, these kids that go through this program come out with an associate's degree, with certificates that they need to go and work in the gas and oil. And literally in Ingleside, gas and oil is in their backyard. It's like literally like you drive past it getting to the administrative building. But I'm like, how cool is that? But I'm thinking of those guys, the big brute guys going there, but it's like, no, you don't get to go there. You got to go deal with the kindergartners.
Right,
So,
exactly.
but how cool is that that they are same thing that you guys are doing, just finding ways to educate kids, to help them to be the best that they can be in and with the things that they love. And I think I don't know that he said it, and he probably didn't, but I think nine and that's okay, this was a judgment on my see how we do that. I immediately assumed that every single kid was a boy, and they probably all aren't. And they're award winners, and he was showing me this. They have these projects that they do, and they got first in show last year, and they got second in show the year before. And here I am thinking it's only boys, and I'm like, well, that was really kind of sexist of me, wasn't it? Because that's not me. I'm like a hot and sweaty and dirty, and no, I don't do those things. But there you go. It's and exactly that. It's exactly that. You have to. I made an assumption because I wasn't there. I didn't deal with it. I didn't see all the kids. And your point is, get in there, see what's truly happening. And even if you don't, and if you're a parent and you're listening, you don't have to sub. Go and sit in one of those classrooms. Go and visit. You don't even have to sub. Go and see what's happening in those schools and look at something that's hard. Look at the hard things that are happening. And schools are so open to, I mean, open book, come and see, come and see. And that's exactly what he did. He's like, come and see what we're doing, you know. And it's a big enough district that we went to the closest thing to the admin office because I was like, no, I don't want you to drive me all over. It's okay. We'll just, and he's like, well, come see this. We got the, and it was pristine. I mean, you could tell they cared about what they were doing. The building was so clean. And you can tell the people that are there care about what they're doing. So, and I'm sure that if I come to you, I'd see the same thing. So awesome. Awesome. So I'm sorry. I feel like I've done more talking, Taylor, than you have at this one.
No, it's great. I love, listen, funny anecdote. So as you're talking about, my former college band director is now the director of arts for the Bentonville School District in Bentonville, Arkansas. And so we went over to go see, and he took us around. And I was just like, I just want to meet you for lunch, because we were going there for the Arkansas Arts Academy. We were there for a totally separate thing. But I was just like, I love this man. I respect this man. I just want to see mm-hmm. him. And he took us around the whole district, all their facilities. I was like, these are immaculate. Oh my gosh. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So yeah, when you can see when people really care about what they're doing.
Yeah, for sure. All right. So Taylor, where do people go to learn more about your school and about you?
Perfect. You can go to our website. It's museumschool.org. You can check us out on Facebook and Instagram. There's two. There's Museum School, which is our PTO organization. Then there's Museum School SD, both on Facebook and Instagram. You can see what's going on. Or come out to sunny San Diego and take one of our many tours. It feels like every Wednesday now through the end of February. You can come see my bright, shiny face at way too early in the morning and sometimes in the evening, too.
Awesome. We actually, Lighthouse is going to be in San Diego on the, I think it's the 11th through the 14th of January. So we'll have to see what we can do.
Wing on by.
And we're going to be in we're going to be in the San Diego area. So yeah, definitely. All right. Well, thank you, Taylor. It has been such an incredible pleasure to have you on the show and to learn about your district and your passion. And sounds like we have so many things in common. So it's just been an incredible pleasure to have you on. So thank you.
Thank you very much for having me. This has been a lot of fun.
Absolutely.